participation in police making. Thank you.
Hello all, thank you for coming. So my presentation here, it deals with the use of wikis, and actually not only wikis, but a lot of other online tools that I'll make some examples of to promote public participation in policy making. And by policy making, I'm speaking very broadly about regulation, legislation, and everything basically that's done by governmental authorities or municipalities on all levels. It can be local or national, to regulate different aspects of our lives. So, well, you cannot see the title, The Need for E-Participation. Actually, it's quite straightforward if we go to the root of the modern democratic theory. I'll make it very, very schematic because it's not our focus here. But if we go to the beginning, we see the Athenian polis, this small Athenian city where all men, although not women and slaves, but all men were allowed to take part in the governmental or the city decision making, and they were all involved, and actually they had to be involved. It was an offense not to participate in these proceedings. And afterwards, rather similarly to what happens now in Wikipedia, we had problems of size and scale. Not everybody could participate when it wasn't anymore a small city, but rather a big city or an even bigger national state. And then there was a compromise, the representative democracy, where we the citizens, just elect our representatives who make policies. Now the internet, or so I'd like to argue, opens a new window for public participation, because we can deal much better with these problems of size and scale. We can accommodate much more people in the conversation and in the decision making. And in fact, public policies affect all spheres of our life. You can think about health and environment, criminal stuff, traffic, food, drugs, everything. So how can we affect all this stuff that's done by our elected representatives, who often don't really represent us as well as we would like to? The advantages of effective public participation are very clear-cut. So it's civic education for those who just want to know what the policy is about, civic empowerment for poor or disadvantaged groups who don't have any kind of voice otherwise in governmental decision-making, legitimacy and political and public support for policies, which is also better achieved if more people are involved in the policy-making processes. The quality of the public policies may be better because of the local knowledge and local expertise that citizens have and governmental officials may not have. And also implementation and enforcement may get better, as I'll show you later. So what are the goals of e-participation? What are we trying to achieve? And again, you don't see the title, I apologize. So first, education. We just want to provide more information to citizens to create a more knowledgeable body of individuals in our country. And of course, it's not limited to a country. It can be on a local, national, even international level if we get really ambitious about this whole project. So first, education, rather passive. We don't really need the Web 2.0 tools. It's all the basic internet that we had, say, 10 years ago. Political expression, I use it very broadly to let citizens to set priorities, to let them express their opinion about public policies. It's a whole variety of freedom of speech that's given to citizens using the internet. And now we get to some more, I think, sophisticated and innovative stuff, fact-finding. We can rely on crowdsourcing. So, for instance, instead of relying on a very small body of experts to solve a problem, we can rely on a very big body of individuals, each of whom has very specific knowledge, and a conversation among whom can bring us to very creative and insightful solutions. So this is fact-finding. Intuition goes to enforcement. We can involve people. So, for example, if you live near a polluting manufacturer, you don't need anymore to wait for the municipality to come and make sure that he won't pollute anymore. You can just report that, hey, this guy pollutes and I want to change this. And we'll see examples of how it happens. And you can see a picture of a pyramid here. So in fact, the education is the bottom, which is the widest part. But collaborative government is the most ambitious part and the actually the direct democracy part of e-participation. And of course, it's the top of the pyramid. Because only it's very hard to encourage participation. And as I'll show you, the major challenges of e-participation lie in this specific part of collaborative governance, and we'll come back to this later. So now I'd like to show different examples of how these goals of e-participation, these five goals that are listed here, how they are currently implemented on the ground or on the online ground. And I have some links, I hope they will work. So first example would be a wiki. It's the Open Congress site in the United States. You can see here, basically, this website brings a lot of information about what's going on in the American Congress. But what's different about it, what's different from a regular site that just cites bills? So for example, we'll go to the American Clean Energy Act, Energy and Security Act. So you can see, first of all, the amount of views, which is rather impressive. So if we have in mind the goal of education, we do educate people using this. And here, people can also leave comments. And you can see 460 comments on this specific bill. We can see videos that are related to it. Here are the comments. So there are all kinds of conversations. It's great in terms of giving more information. The main problem is that all these people who invest their time in writing comments, they don't really affect the act. They just express their opinion and nothing more happens, which is rather unfortunate. But still, if we have in mind the goal of education, it's great. Sure. They take it from the official Congress site. Yeah, yeah. And then another thing that they do, they provide summaries. So you have an official summary, and then you have a wiki form of a summary, which users can edit using a wiki. Open Australia is another example. Rather similar, less sophisticated. They don't have a wiki. They just have all the texts of the Australian legislation and then comments. And you can see here, for instance, more recent comments, so you can see everything that's going on. This site is also less active. You can see that the last comment was 1 week ago. In terms of political expression, we have a great variety of tools. So first of them would be e-voting, which is rather common in different countries. Estonia was a pioneer of it. I won't show it. There is nothing really interesting to see on the website, but it can involve a lot of different optical technologies to allow e-voting, and what's been done in Estonia is just some kind of a passport, which is electronic, and they use it. Another very common thing, which is also, it doesn't require much of our time to participate in, is e-petitions, and it's a very, very common tool in a lot of countries. I think the most successful so far has been in the United Kingdom. It's the number 10 Downing Street, gov.uk. The interesting part about this initiative is that the government pledged to reply to all petitions that reach 200 signatures. And when you think about the scale of the internet, 200 signatures is really not a big deal. So it's very easy to get a reply from the government. Very often these replies are rather formal. Yeah, we considered it. It's not such a good idea. Let's move on or suggest something better. I'll show you the most popular petition, which considered traffic and tax on some road tolls. And they had more than 1 million signatures. Yeah, actually almost 2 million. The planned vehicle tracking and road pricing policy. So it's very popular. I'm not sure if it has much effect, but it's widely used in the UK. Another example, and I won't talk too much about it. It's rather straightforward. Blogs, of course, are a supreme tool for e-participation. The Daily Cost, for those who know it, it's a left-wing American website where people put their diaries, which stand for private blogs, and there are a lot of public blogs, a whole system of hierarchy and rules of how to operate it. So it's actually, it's a much better, it's a much more sophisticated and substantial form of political expression. People invest much more in it, but still not really an effect on the policies that are being upheld in the government. And of course, social networks, Facebook and Twitter are very common tools. Again, we can contest whether they have any effect or not. Fact-finding, I think I'm sorry for the phones. So I think fact-finding, here it gets more interesting. So one example we have, which is really an amazing thing, I think, it's the Ushahidi. Ushahidi stands for testimony in Swahili. And the goal of this website is to report about governmental violence. So if we are speaking about e-participation in governmental policies, of course, it's not the best idea because it goes against the government, but the tool is similar. So what you can see here is a map of Kenya reporting about all the different violations. And here we see all categories, but we can see only death, for example. And these are the events in Kenya following the January 2008 elections. This is an amazing tool because usually in African countries or in other countries with authoritarian regimes, it's very hard to understand what's really going on. And if you have this tool and if people have an internet access, and of course there are a lot of censorship problems, but if we leave it aside, to have this tool is really to allow the international community, for example, to see what's been going on. And also if we have the map, it's of course a very useful tool to try and help people who are in these regions. So this was Ushahidi. Another example is, I guess it's well known to all of you, I'm sorry, I don't have the link to it, but the Iranian elections Twitter. And we got a lot of information about Iran from this tool. Again, here it goes against the government, but I think that a right governmental policy can encourage people to use these tools to provide valuable information. Maybe not in countries like Iran or Kenya, but in liberal democratic countries, it's something that can be useful. Another thing is Rate Your Politician. Another initiative from the United Kingdom. Here people can put information and reports about their elected officials. So actually, politicians in the United Kingdom get rather stressed about this website because it's completely free and you can put all information that you have, you can cite them, you can do whatever you want, and then you'll have a whole database about this specific person. It can be a problem if he wants to be elected, and of course it's great from a transparency point of view. In terms of enforcement, we also have a great UK initiative. It all comes, all the United Kingdom projects come from mysociety.org. So Fix My Street, and that's exactly the vision of e-participation in governments or in policy making. So if something is wrong on your street, you just report it on this website, and it should get fixed by the municipality. So you can see here, for example, the Aberdeen City Council, new problems, recently fixed problems, old fixed. It's, if you compare it to the offline world, you have a pavement broken, for example, and then you write to the municipality and you're not really sure to whom to write and you're not really sure if they reply or not, and here everything is on a single website, so it's really great in terms of the service that the municipality provides. Another example is the Wiki Crimes. They use some wiki technology, and here people, it's also, it can be very useful in countries where the police is corrupted, for example. It was developed in Brazil, in Rio de Janeiro. Private people can report. This was developed in Rio de Janeiro, but I guess it can be very useful in all countries. So we can see reports about robbery, theft, etc. in different places. Here we come to Rio de Janeiro, Porto Alegre. It's very popular in Brazil, I think, but not yet in other countries. So you can see some statistics. You can see the recent robberies, etc. You can just play with it in your spare time if you find it interesting. And now we reach the most challenging part of, yeah.
I was saying that for the example of Wiki Crimes or Shahidi, I think is the name, here in Argentina we have an example of one politician, that won the last election. It called the map of the insecurity. He used the problem of insecurity here for political reason, of course, but he put a map. But the map was very bad because people start putting jokes there or very bizarre things like, I was raped here, but I like it, or something like that. And then was born a page like making joke of this page, of all the things that people put that was funny. When I was wondering, what do you think of this? Because somebody people put that kind of thing, and maybe the whole idea goes away.
I think it's a great question, and it's a great place to ask this question, because actually you can say the same about Wikipedia. So how do you know that completely outrageous things will not be put on Wikipedia? You don't really know. You rely on the community to fix it. So of course for wiki crimes it can be a problem, because you are the only testimony that something has happened. So of course it's a problem, and I guess the advantage of a wiki crime is that it only gives an indication. It doesn't really require an action. So even if it's scam, it doesn't hurt anybody. But I think as these sites will develop and evolve into something more sophisticated, they'll have definitely to deal with these issues. On wiki crimes, they have some kind of an authentication system where other people can provide evidence. So it exists. I don't want to spend too much time on this, but we can discuss it afterwards. So now, we don't see the title again, but the collaborative governance examples. And this is the most challenging part, because here we care about representativeness, and if we really want to engage people in governmental decision making, we care about much more things than if we just want to rely on people for enforcement or fact finding, which are only extras, as you can say. So one interesting example is the New Zealand Police Act. The New Zealand government 2 years ago decided that it wanted to put its Police Act online on a wiki. I'm sorry. Back. So it wanted to put its Police Act on a wiki to let all people change it and create the really democratic Police Act. So this is the final result, and we have the wiki view, and then we have alternative views that were not included in the final version. So you see comment and response, so there were really conversations among people, and apparently it was very productive. The only problem is that it wasn't really implemented. So the government had this whole process, and afterwards it responded to all the comments, but it's unclear what was included and what was not included in the final policing act, and it's not clear whether there was any substantial effect of the public on the final result. Another example would be the FLOSS roadmap for 2020. And here we have, you'll see an example of a very interesting technology that combines a wiki with some discussion tools. It was developed by a French company, Sopin Space. It's called Comment with a dash, co-dash-ment. And you'll see it. So you see that the text is highlighted. If you press on it, you can see comments. Actually, Philippe Agren is the guy who developed the technology. His comment is first. So you can see the list, and you can read and reply and tag these all stuff. It's not. It's very new. It's not very developed, and the rate of participation on the FLOSS project is not huge, but it gives some sense of the technology, and I think it it has a great potential in terms of engaging more people and collaboratively editing such texts. Another rather similar example is the Open University debate, which was held in Torino. The Torino University wanted to know whether its students wanted to open up the university to make all the teaching and scholarship materials open, to rely more on open source technologies, etc. And they held the whole debate, including the agenda, which you see here in Italian, and here all the comments. So you can see the comment and the reply, and again, a productive conversation. I guess in university settings, it can work better because the scale is smaller. So we see that there are examples of collaborative governance and mainly using wikis, but the question is, can we really accommodate it on a large scale? And here are the challenges. So first, lack of sufficient degree of participation. Not everybody is aware of the problems. Not everybody wants to participate. The part of the fun and the collaboration may be lost if it's about the government and not about a Wikipedia or a wiki-related project, which involves a lot of community. So here, the sense of community may be lost. Another important problem is noise. A lot of repetition, a lot of low-quality posts. One people can just comment everything, a lot of information cascades, which mean a huge first-mover advantage. If five people put certain posts on this website, others are rather likely to continue in the same direction, and then important parts will be lost. Capture, it's a huge problem for governmental projects because these projects are important for our life, and there are a lot of interested parties who want to influence them, and unequal participation only exacerbates all this. Selection bias, it's similar for all these projects, but here as well, technological skills, education, age, gender, wealth, they all affect participation, and poor people are often excluded. So what I'll do with the rest of my time is just to suggest some recommendations of how these problems can be solved, and of course it's very schematic. I'll be happy to talk about this more if you're interested. So first, what we need is an active outreach and engagement of disadvantaged groups to deal with first, to enhance the degree of participation, to deal with capture, to deal with selection bias. So what it actually means is to go to a poor neighborhood and to say, hey, you should go to the library, connect to the internet, and express your opinion. Of course, it can be very difficult, but it's the only way we have to deal with it. To emphasize, really, identity is also important because of problems of capture. If you know that somebody represents a big corporation, your reaction to his post will be different. Also, it's supposed to enhance the quality of the posts. Another goal would be to lower entry barriers, to provide summaries, to provide graphical trees, to provide a lot of tools that actually we are aware of right now to make it easier for individuals who are not especially high-tech savvy to participate. Reputation systems, you know from Wikipedia that they're highly important in terms of enhancing the quality of the post. And also human moderation is necessary to make the discussion more goal-oriented and more productive. Super users, those who are especially active and interested, can also be moderators, of course. We should also assure representativeness, and we are speaking about collaborative governance. So if these decisions will affect us, we want people who have something to deal with us and our problems to take them. So it can be online juries, it can be some kind of deliberative polls. This term goes for a randomly selected group of people who supposed to represent the general population. So we can just test on them the ideas that were expressed online. Assuring implementation, this is a huge thing. If the municipality or the governmental agency is not interested in this whole project, nothing will come out of it, and of course it's something that any online tool cannot solve their motivation. And lastly, we have participatory stages. So it's important to involve in such projects, it's important to involve people not only in the discussion, but also in the collaborative agenda setting. And we saw it in the Open University example, if you recall. So we can use a wiki for this. A free flow of ideas is important. And here, probably a wiki wouldn't be the better tool because we need something more encouraging to express a lot of different ideas, so a discussion forum. Can be good, and then a collaborative drafting, and for this, of course, the wiki seems to be the best tool. So these are my very modest schematic points of how to make this thing better, and that's it. Thank you.
Questions?
I was just wondering if you had any examples of people using online organizing for like an action or a protest in public, if you had like any good examples of that.
Yeah, I have one example where a wiki was used. I don't know if you're well aware with the American politics and the American elections, but President Obama, 1 year before his election, pledged that he will vote against a certain act, which the act gave, it was about warranties that were not given to telecom companies. So basically, to make the story short, he said that he would vote against the act, and then 2 months before the election, he said, I'll vote for it. And all his supporters, which were highly active, were outraged. He promised something and then he reversed his opinion 2 months before the elections. It was a very big thing. And then one of the supporters said, we don't really want to leave the Obama base of support because we do want him to be elected. We don't want McCain, but we do want to protest. So what they did was to create a group under mybarackobama.com. And then they also created a wiki. And they collaborated. The group was huge. In 2 days, they had more than 20,000 members, which is rather impressive, on the MyBarackObama.com website. And then they opened this wiki, and on the wiki, they collaboratively drafted an open letter to Obama saying that they still support him, but they protest, and they don't like his policy, and they're very, very sad. And Obama actually responded to them in another open letter, and explain that there is nothing he can do, and he has to vote for this law anyways. But this was an example of a political protest, and they used the wiki. The interesting thing was that this open letter was, in fact, drafted by the five most active members, but it was signed by the 20,000 members of the community that was against it. But still, it was a wiki. It's called President Obama or Senator Obama, please make FISA right. The law was called FISA. President, I'll show you on the... Here it is. And they're still active, in fact, because the law was upheld, so now they have different initiatives how to fight it. Yeah.
I wanted to ask you to say that I believe many of us think this online democracy and work in this direction is actually good if we could solve at least some of the problems you listed at the end. But I believe that we as a movement, the free culture movement, need to politically do something to get our governments to make this not just a voice, not just, hey, Obama, please, no, but instead do this, and you cannot avoid it. It's like when the governments do a public consultation and we all say yes, and then the government does no, and it's okay. We should have much more referendums. Like we should be able to elect things, and things actually happen. And I believe that our movement is getting big enough. It's like we have the mass of people, but we need to organize not just the online tools, the software, etc., but the political movement. We need to move to get this to happen.
I cannot agree with you more. I think that's exactly the most important part of it. I think tools are important because it's easier to get this done on a local level. So if you live in a small town, it's much easier to persuade the municipality to do something because it's small, and if they want to be elected, they'll have to do something. And then if it works fine on the local level, you can move slowly to the national level. So yeah, it's a combined thing. My purpose here was to show what tools can be possibly available, but as I said in the assuring implementation, it's crucial, because if it will not be implemented, everything was absolutely futile. So yeah, you're absolutely right. It has to be a combined action.
One last question.
Oops. This is Frank. I had the chance to speak with German government officials about this subject. Was positively surprised. They're very open to these issues. Brought up an issue saying, what is the legal aspect? Pointing out that a social divide, say we have in Germany, well, roughly two-thirds that can participate. There's one-third that have an intellectual or financial or whatever problem not to. So if we accept those eager people, are we becoming slightly undemocratic, yeah, by using these collaboration tools? Do we need to change our constitution? So there is unsureness, an openness to do so, but it's very unsure on the legal aspect. And Jennifer, you're about to become a legal expert, so you probably had some thoughts on this. Thank you.
Thank you for this question. Actually, Germany is an excellent example, and I think it's the most advanced country so far from what I've seen in terms of e-participation. They have incredibly promising projects called participatory budgeting. They have it in a district in Berlin. They have it in Freiburg, in Hamburg. Maybe I'm missing another place. And the way this participatory budget thing works, and this is the reply to the democracy point. So first, they have open online participation. And of course, it's not very democratic because of the selection bias. Only a small group with some predefined criteria participate. But afterwards, they test the suggestions on a representative group of people. And they try to see if it works or not, and then they bring the suggestions to the city assembly. So it's not that this small group decides something, it's only one part of the decision-making process. And I think it can be an answer to the legal constitution change question, because we don't really want to change the whole system, not right now, because internet access is problematic, we have the digital divide problems, it's all very new and undeveloped in this sense. So in terms of integrating it in the process of legislation, in most countries it's fine. For example, in the US, I'm not very well aware with the German legal system, but in the US, for example, there is a system called RegNeg. You can negotiate with the public, with the affected public, about the regulation which will affect it. And then it's very easy to integrate the internet process because the legislation is there. For countries which don't allow this kind of a consultation currently, of course, legislation will have to be changed. I don't think that it's a constitutional change because it's just a process. You don't really move your whole system to the internet. You say we have here another path, and this path can be huge, but still we don't need to change everything. We can integrate it in the current system. Basically it's legacy.ushahidi.com. I'll try to bring it back. Yeah, well, I'll try to show it to you. Yeah, just Google Ushahidi and Kenya. Ushahidi is U-S-H-A-H-I-D-I. And they have more than Kenya. They have the swine flu now. They covered the swine flu. They covered the violence in Congo and some more stuff. Here we go. Here is Ushahidi.